Conic Rose's version of jazz is many things. Flexible, sexy, dexterous, beautiful, wicked. The one thing it's not is predictable. And that's what makes it amazing. The Berlin Outfit has made one of the best jazz albums in recent memory by never sticking to one subgenre or one idea, constantly passing the baton of new melodies, new rhythms, and new excitement. We talk to them here on the 2010s.
All right. Well, welcome to the podcast. Let's get a quick round of introductions.
Hi, I'm Bertram. I play the guitar in Conic Rose.
I'm Konstantin. I play the trumpet.
My name is Johannes and I play keyboards.
I'm Nicholas. I'm the newest in the family and I play drums for Conic Rose.
And I'm Franzi and play the bass in Conic Rose.
Thank you all so much for coming through. Yeah, so I wanted to start out with some of the foundations of these songs come from places that I didn't expect as I was researching. for example, pardon me, the first song, Honey Lake, having a chord progression that is partially based off of a Bach song, or of course having a song called Chopin Rose, having classical influence on this record. I was wondering, where did that influence come from and where was the idea of, like, I've heard this chord progression, I've heard this theme or this motif, we're going to mutate this into kind of electronic jazz? How did that start?
I think this Honey Lake harmony is coming from an idea of mine. it's actually pretty simple. I'm really not a very good piano player and I love Bach. And so I have this Bach choral book and it has only four voices. So I love to play these Bach chorals. And I played O Haupt voll Blut und Wunden, which is a very, very famous choral of Bach. And I just played two or three bars of this choral and made it very slow. So like one quarter note is a whole bar in this chord progression. And with this chord progression, I went to Bertram, who is our guitar player, who is a very,
classically trained,
and a very good composer. And I went to him and asked him if he has some ideas. And then we went right into the composing process of Conic Rose and played around. And then it turned into this one.
Yeah, we kind of started also to listen to classical pieces to get inspired in a way. So Chopin Rosé was one idea where we, I think, reversed a part of Chopin. I don't know which piece it was, but we reversed it and that made it into the intro of the song.
As a vocalist, one of the interesting things about this album is that throughout the album, it really feels like the trumpet, especially when the mute is on it, is really replicating the range of the human voice and sort of kind of the melodic and almost lead aspect of where you would assume a vocal would be in a jazz, electronic, or rock song. I was wondering for you, in terms of playing trumpet in that way, if you're trying to replicate the human voice in terms of a harmonic lead, or if it's more along the lines of that's just where it happens to fit.
Okay, I'm the trumpet player, so yes, you are totally right. It's probably obvious that we listen a lot to, for example, Radiohead, and also in this song Honey Lake, we had Radiohead in our mind. So when we record, or when we are looking for trumpet melodies in our songs, we are thinking of Thom Yorke a lot, and also other singers of all our influences that's the main goal. And I don't think of many typical jazz music bands when I think of playing the trumpet in our band. It's really, yeah, I think the sound is the most important thing for us, and the melody, and not a a wild improvisation or many technical things I could maybe do on the trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking for this specific sound. Yeah.
And in a way, we when we produced the songs, we kind of figured out another way where we how to put the trumpet as a lead instrument. So I don't know, maybe it's because we play in another band together, and it's a pop singer, and so it was in kind of maybe interesting for us to get these shapes of or arrangements a little bit like a pop song, you know what I mean? So to maybe keep it more I don't know, more as if it would be a singer, you know. So
yeah, because there's a lot of opening within the frequencies of a tenor or alto in your songs that are filled by the horns rather than where you would traditionally find a vocalist.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
I had read in a different interview that when it came to some of the improvisation, or it came to finding these moments that would eventually turn into full songs, you would have improvisations, record them again, and kind of the piece would emerge over time. And I'm wondering, how different are some of these final compositions from where an original horn riff or guitar riff or piano lead would be? Like, how far did some of these initial sounds mutate until they became their final forms?
I would say it's very, very, very different. In a lot of situations, it will stay the improvised thing, like 100% natural, and it's just mixed. But it's the audio that we recorded in the very first take, for example, by constantly playing the trumpet. And then the thing that is added is more that I would double this melody with the guitar. Like, for example, in Miranda, we have this first, like there's this brass horn parts which are accompanying the melody. And then this was kind of an improvisation by Consti, and then I doubled with the freeze pedal and all this stuff to make it sound or be recognized more as a composed melody. This is just happening by doubling for our experience. And in other cases, we recorded stuff that you wouldn't know where it comes from because it's so heavily shaped by different devices and stuff and
different effects.
Yeah.
Effect pedals.
But there is no clear rule of how far we get.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly if it's super nice in the beginning, we just stay with it, and if we are not satisfied, we go and go and go and go, and then it's becoming something differently, and it's more like an intuition when to start with something that feels nice.
Would it be more common for something to start as a melodic idea or a rhythmic idea first, like a good groove or a good riff first?
Depends. I think it's also different. I always love to create textures or fields of sounds. I love the drone idea, and that can be anything, but it's basically a loop or something, and then it's free of, or it creates a rhythm after a while. That can happen, or it just gives a give space for a melody or for a groove, anything.
Nice. Hey, you had brought up Miranda, which was actually a song I wanted to ask about, because it seems like a song that introduces new hooks and new riffs and new ideas very, very quickly and then moves on to the next one. For example, this kind of bridge in the middle where there's suddenly acoustic guitar and accordion and this kind of playful voice in the background for a second, then it cuts off. And I was wondering about what?
Sorry, it's just nice that you heard that.
Yeah, well, I was wondering about that sort of thing, because obviously you guys shape a lot of this music afterwards within the computer, or it takes a long time just jamming it out and figuring out where you want to go. But for kind of a radical departure like that, of we're going to introduce an instrument that you haven't heard on the album before, acoustic guitar, which doesn't pop up that often. I mean, what was that? Did the song just have this need for this kind of playful, more relaxed moment? And all of you were like, all right, we just got to figure out something in there that's going to be a little bit more giddy and mischievous.
I don't know. Maybe it's something really, I just think about this little accordion-like sound. It's in, which song is it? El Atac, right?
Oh. Mm-hmm.
This really just, it, maybe it's just after, well, while we were producing, there were so many, we heard the song so many times. And I think kind of those moments might be just a break out of like, okay, we have to do something else there, or I don't know.
Yeah, this one specific moment where Johnny is talking about in Hell Attack, it's before the end part of the song. This and this is, I think, I don't know, you hear like Johnny's children playing around with toys, and maybe it's even his
my
daughter playing on the white things on the keyboard of some sound. I think we didn't even play it ourselves, and it was more like we just had the microphone going, and then they came in and we talked to them. They said hello and we showed them some instruments, and randomly at this moment of the song, which we didn't actually hear in the moment, it was muted, but it recorded, and then it was fitting kind of nicely, and then it was something that stayed, but super accidentally, or not accidentally, coincidentally.
Maybe it's a feeling we had while we were with this song, like either composing or just being with this song. And maybe that's the feeling which kind of represents it, and we just wanted to show it. And maybe that's also the acoustic guitar in
I
Miranda.
I think the acoustic guitar, I just had it with me, and I put I don't know, different strings on it. And then I wanted to hear how it sounds through my new microphone that I bought or something like this. And then I said, hey, can I play like two takes on this tune just to hear the guitar? And then it was this. And then we said, maybe it's actually cool to have an acoustic guitar there. It goes in this direction. Let's keep it. And then we kept it. And then in the mixing, it was featured in a way.
Yeah.
And now it's in.
Happy coincidence.
Yes. Again.
Maybe, yeah.
Not everything is coincidence, but a lot.
Yeah.
There were two songs that really struck me as kind of different, just mood-wise, which was... and I love this title, Sad Wacky Waving Inflatable Tube Guy, and Goodbye, which both seemed much more atmospheric, and also they were much shorter than many of the other compositions. And I was wondering if there was a different process for y'all as a band when it came to these more atmospheric, a little bit more somber pieces as compared to the rest of the album.
Yeah, I think for Sad Wacky, because I was about to... continue the question before with this song, because there was like these moments in the studio where we really just experimented a lot and tried out like these ideas we just had in Hell Attack or the acoustic guitar, or and for Sad Wacky it was basically we produced the whole track, not the whole track but a lot of it, just with the guitar and synthesizer sounds. And really experimented with the guitar to create a drum beat, for example. And that made it maybe so interesting already to keep it as just an interlude or something. And I think we weren't really sure if we wanted to put it on the album. But in the end, we said, okay, we have to kind of... I remember we weren't sure if we should put it on. And... yeah, same with Goodbye. I don't know how it was there.
Are those songs going to have they or are they going to appear live, or do you mutate them when you play them live?
Yeah, Sad Wacky is really a song we just basically do in duo with. Nicholas. Yeah, he's new in the band, so he wasn't really in the creation in the process of the album. Sad Wacky is a song we just really freely started to play and then try to recreate what it is on the album. But it's a lot of fun.
Nice. I wanted to ask specifically about the jazz scene or larger scene that y'all are in Berlin, because you hear within the scene that jazz and electronic and rock often cross paths, or is it more of you're trying to mix some of the things that don't often cross paths within your scene?
I think it's not about the Berlin jazz scene. I don't think we're so well connected to that scene, actually. Maybe you more on Franz.
Yeah, we know a lot of people, but
yeah,
it's not like our inspirational base or community, like in a hardcore way. It's more that we have a lot of contacts there, and some it's more like a holiday for me, actually, when I play in this with jazz musicians in Berlin. It's more like holiday in a way that I go there as an experience, but it's not that I do it all the time. And
I think it comes from how we work individually, like Johnny, he's playing with I think 3 or 4 pop star groups in Germany on hip hop and pop, and he's working as a producer a lot. So he has many influences from that scene, working in the studio with all these synthesizers and Bertram, he studied the classical guitar and the jazz guitar. So from Bertram's side, I think there's a lot of classical music as well. It's incredible when he plays all this classical guitar stuff. And Franzi, I think Franzi is playing in 2,000 different ensembles and groups all over Germany, composing. What are you doing, Franzi?
As I'm not playing in 2,000 bands. No, maybe it's a little bit interesting because maybe it represents a little bit the Berlin scene, maybe not the jazz scene, but the music scene, that we are maybe in so different things, but still can go together in a band, like a little bit, maybe a little bit experimental, or we are 3 of us are in one kind of orchestra stuff going on. So we, the background of classical music, I have too. And so I think maybe this is very interesting that there's something going on, as if someone put us together, or Konsti helped us to be together at the beginning, and then we see what's happening or what's coming out, or how we play together, or how we do it. I don't know. Like, is it right? Can you help me, guys?
I just wanted to say that we just played a tour a few weeks ago, and it was funny to see that we were playing in a really kind of, let's say, underground indie club the one day, and the other day it was a more chilled jazz club. So there was like really two worlds. We kind of try to fit in both, maybe.
Do you feel like when you're playing either in an indie club versus that kind of relaxed jazz club you were talking about, Does the way that you play or interact with the audience change because of the different ambiance within those two different places?
Good question. Nice question.
Yes, for me, definitely, yes. It feels totally different if the people are standing or sitting, for example, which is the difference between a jazz club and an indie club, for example. Most of the time in jazz clubs, they are sitting, and maybe they also want us to do a break between two sets for drinks, selling drinks, which is different in indie clubs. And it's also most of the time it's a bit more younger people in these clubs. Mm-hmm. And yeah, of course, I mean, the atmosphere is different, so we play differently for sure.
But I must say, I totally agree what you said, but I also find it very what's the English word? I don't know, interesting, let's call it interesting, it's nicer, of course, to have people like standing, because we have like really parts where we are like, okay, we need to dance or something, and when they're sitting, it's I like to kind of try to, I mean, I know, it's hard for me to say it in English, sorry. to be as convincing for people who are sitting as for people who are standing. Does it make sense in a way? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe it's a bit the same that I wanted to say. Not really. But it's maybe the same thought. For me, it feels like our music is already with the recording process, it's kind of well structured. Like the simplest example would be maybe like that's not the simplest, but one that comes in my mind, like the frequencies where each instrument is acting in which moment. This is kind of clear because the songs are composed in this way, that I, as a guitarist, sometimes I cover lower registers and sometimes upper ones. And this is not as free as in a super free jazz quartet improvised music, where even the tempo of the song or the whole aesthetics or something can change from evening to evening. So for me, it's harder to refresh the music by super new drastic changes in what I play, which would be the jazz club version, because people are sitting and looking and hearing and very interested and very focused on what you are doing. But it works better for me when we refresh the music by the vibe in the room and by the audience, and by how energetic or how whatever funny or intense we play the parts. So it's more like a group energy that maybe changes according to the audience. And this is the point where I think I prefer it when they are dancing and more like on a festival, because it gives us an easier direction of where to go with the music in the live situation. This would be my answer.
It's a little bit easier to feed off energy when the crowd is giving you back something that's also rhythmic with dancing.
Yeah. Rhythmic or energetic or smiles. Impulsive or something like this. Not just observing. And
it can be a little unnerving just no reaction, just someone staring at you.
Yeah. I would actually enjoy if they hear the album and they are like this. They are sitting and hearing the album, and I can watch them how they have their face and stuff like this. This would be very nice. But for playing it live, I feel better if